Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. This episode was recorded at the Living Theaters space on Clinton Street a while ago. It's an interview with some of the artists from The Assembly, following one of the final performances of their show, Homesick, from last year's Underground Zero Festival. While I unfortunately wasn't able to get this episode out before the show closed, or before its encore run in November, this company's work is fascinating, and this interview with them is well worth listening to. And somewhat appropriately timed, because in case you haven't heard the bad news, one of the vanguards of Off-Off-Broadway and of American theater is shutting its doors. The Living Theater has left its Clinton Street space, and founder Judith Molina has moved from the city to the Lillian Booth Actors Home. All things must pass, I suppose, but this is sad news nonetheless. And yet, executive director of The Living, Brad Burgess, says the company will continue to produce. In fact, you've still got four more chances to see Molina's Here We Are, the last show performed at the Clinton Street Theater, when it returns in late March to the Clemente Soto Velez Flamboyant Theater on Suffolk Street. Head to livingtheater.org for tickets and information. And now, here are director Jess Chase, dramaturg Stephen Aubrey, designer Nick Benassaraf, and actor Edward Bauer from The Assembly. Take a listen. So I'm going to start with just getting everybody's name on the mic because I'm, like I said, really bad with names, and that way I can't mispronounce it.
I'm Nick Benassaraf, and I'm set designer and artistic director.
Your titles are good too.
As Nick said, we're all co-artistic directors. I'm Edward Bauer. I am primarily an actor.
I'm Stephen Aubrey, and I'm primarily a writer.
I'm Jess Chase, and I'm a director.
So now everybody's got to keep those voices straight. Right? So the show is Homesick. This is not the first time you've done it, though, right?
Correct.
And what? When was the first time, and why bring it back?
Well, we did it last summer around this time at the Collapsible Hole in Williamsburg. And why bring it back? Because we nearly sold out, like a beautiful 5-week run, and the responses were great. And not only did people like it, but it felt pretty important because it's a show about questioning, you know, your political masters and the government. And, you know, right after we closed, or sort of concurrent with our closing, was sort of when Occupy Wall Street really took off and became this huge thing, which was just one of the many reasons that we felt like this show has real relevance right now, and we want to keep doing it and keep asking these questions.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes to my first question was really like, why a show about the weather underground?
I think everyone has a very different thing that brought us to the story, and so it's hard to get a blanket answer. But we have, I think part of it that drew us to it was that we identify, or I guess we're put into this category as this apathetic generation, and we felt very much that these were our political and emotional opposites in many ways. We kind of were interested in exploring what it is that empowered these people to take such drastic action to change their environment and their life, whether or not we agreed with the specifics of what they did. And that was in many ways a political awakening for some of us, or at least a specification of how we wanted to behave and move forward.
Yeah, and I think it felt like the 60s were not that long ago, and you know, a lot of our parents were sort of, you know, they were obviously around, but they were, some of them were involved.
And we were at the Living Theater, and this has been around since before then. So
exactly, and it felt sort of strange to us that you know, just out of the reach of our lifetimes, there was a time when people really thought that a group of committed people could change society for the better. Just speaking for myself, I think that's something that I've never really felt about, you know, our government and our country. And we were very fascinated with that particular concept, or I was at least. And I think a lot of this was a quest to see what that feels like and what that looks like when you think that your actions can really change the world around you, and what propels you to try and do so.
Yeah, and in the same way, I think that there was a lot about the Weathermen that made sense, at least to me too. We started working on this play, or we conceived of it. We knew we were going to write it at the tail end of the Bush administration and started writing it at the beginning of the Obama administration, which were, in my mind, two moments that were really important to me politically, one being I understood their anger very well. There was a lot that was happening in that time period that was being carried out in my name that I wasn't happy with. And the election of Obama was a hopeful moment and was maybe one of the first moments where I felt that I had a voice and I had some sort of power to do something politically that I hadn't before. So for me, at least, the emotional time I was in at that moment made them attractive in a certain way as well.
I don't generally go to this place, but I'm curious because you brought it up and the show is a very political show. But do you feel that making theater is a political act? And if so, please kind of expound upon that.
I think there are a lot of ways to look at that question. I think that, yes, in many ways, everything you do is political.
Right, as Boal said, everything serves politics. So.
That's right. And that, like, everything that has, that shows itself publicly is showing a version of the world, and that is stating the world for what it is, and that is a political thing, because what is visible is what we have, you know? In the same way, everything that shows has a politics inherent in it, you know? And so, in that sense, you know, I don't know if we all feel that way. That's just me. But I think that we have, in many ways, grappled with that tension, hopefully, in this play. And I think that the weather, in particular, maybe misunderstood it. And maybe we're hoping that their intentions would be received in a certain way, but didn't really understand how they would be received. And maybe that was part of the disconnect and why they didn't succeed.
I definitively do not know whether this is, I don't know. I think it's important to ask questions and, God, I don't even know.
I know you thought you were getting into a podcast about theater and I'm like, so what about, yeah,
they're going to softball these, man. it's, I love that we're shedding some light on a chapter in American history that this weird, ugly / beautiful little chapter of youth culture in America that doesn't really get a whole lot of play in, you know, AP US history or whatever you're taking in high school.
Edward was an AP student.
I did very well on the AP history test. Thank you very much. I'm such a jerk.
Did you get a 5?
I don't. I got a 4, I think. I would love to be taking these questions to an even broader group of people. Mm-hmm. You know, I would. And we're hoping to tour and to take it to all sorts of places. And I think it would become more political and more important, like the more we took it to people who were not necessarily on board with the thesis of the show from the beginning. I really don't want to denigrate what we've done, because I'm certainly very proud of us all, but I think there's a great portion of our audience that from the get-go is like, yes, I understand and agree with a lot of what's happening here. And I would be so jazzed to take it to where Luke, who's in the show, grew up in Fayetteville. I think that's the next chapter and the next step, and would be really exciting.
Yeah, and so to, I guess, bring it back to the political question, to me, what is political about theater is when it forces an act of empathy upon you. I think a lot of politics is about empathy, about learning to understand the experiences and the emotions and the challenges of people who are so different from yourselves, or at least in my mind, that's an important political act to make. And I think that this show is trying to do that. It's trying to take some people who did some very radical things that they've been demonized for, and it attempts to make them understandable. And I think, like Edward, I'd be really interested to bring it to an audience outside of New York that would perhaps not be as aligned politically with us.
It would be an even harder sell than...
yeah. I think just even if it's rejected, for trying to attempt the empathy is a really important political act and a theatrical act.
But I think one thing that we can all agree upon, and one thing that we talk a lot about as a group, is not empathy in a particular direction, but rather a complicated sort of empathy that really exposes the contradictions and internal inconsistencies of the Weather Underground. That we want everyone, regardless of their politics, to come out with something more nuanced and complicated than what they came in with.
The end of Act One was a really beautiful scene exposing those contradictions for me as someone who's has an old school leftist background and knew very little about the Weather until only a few years ago. But to see that, and to see that done, as you said, Stephen, theatrically, was a really, really, really powerful moment. So again, this is another episode where I'm editorializing, and I try not to do this, but this is a great show. You should definitely peep this one when it comes back, and it should come back. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about the process, because Nick brought up a really cool, it's Nick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I always second guess myself. Nick mentioned something about getting, you asked this of me, and this is only just me that's saying this, and these are my responses, but you're part of four artistic directors on a show. How do you, as the assembly, figure out where this four-headed monster goes? I mean, this has got to be kind of difficult, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of, like the Weather Underground, a lot of long meetings. No, I mean, thus far, whenever we choose our season, when we choose the plays that we're going to do, we think about something we've never attempted before. I think one of the things we decided on early as a company was that, to start a company was to grow as artists in the best way possible, to define the way we want to make theater. So that does actually involve a lot of consensus building and a lot of sort of looking hard at ourselves and where we want to go as artists and, you know, what we've never attempted before. Other than that, like we work very collaboratively in the room as well. We, try to bring in designers early into the process so that design is a fundamental part. So on every level, we're a very collaborative group of people, and that's true. That's very much true of the way we run our company, I'd say.
And consensus building takes many forms, of course, and they're the
sure.
Yeah. And which is one of the great things about it. Like it is very much like family.
Trust. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much, and there's, there's a powerful there's a trust and a belief that if one of us has a project they've got a burning desire to work on, that isn't going to happen this year or next year, we know that at some point we're going to come back to it. We're always going to really respect the brainchild children that all of us have, and we're going to work on those things.
And one trick that we have that we've learned really, I guess, in the last few years is that we don't choose one show at a time, we choose three, because it's easier to meet the needs of a group when we have this sort of diversity and being able to like plan more long term about how we can serve multiple masters all at the same time. So that way it sort of avoids the preciousness of having to get everything out on this next try.
Right.
And also the other thing is that it's been 6 years. I mean, it has gotten easier over time, and we've gotten better at it, and that's something that has been exciting, especially in this process. I think that this was one of the times where I think we felt we fully lived up to our mission statement for the first time. Who knows if we ever will, but it felt more complete this time, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't trust a mission statement that you can achieve on the first try.
I want to
wise
do
words.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
One last question directed at you, I think, Edward.
Sure.
You talked about we all talked about getting at the trying to understand the emotions and the feelings of this group, these people that did these very radical things that I don't know that many of us in the room would throw a bomb. I know I couldn't do that, but to get at what drove these people to that point has got to be a really difficult thing as an actor.
Sure.
So how did you, Edward, prepare for this, or anything you drew upon? Just talk about the process of creating your character.
Sure. It's sort of funny. I feel a little bit like I cheated. When we were very, very early on in the process of doing a lot of open improvs on, you know, you are at an anti-war rally at Berkeley in the late 60s, etc. Just, you know, try something, do something, especially with an eye towards getting our mouths and our minds around the rhetoric and like how to form these arguments. There was a really early improv where I came on and told Ben, who's another member of the company who's in the show, who was firing off this amazingly on the fly configured polemics against the war, and I told him that my brother had just died in Vietnam, and that sort of became one of the big touchstones for my character. So in a way, I
that was an audition.
Oh yeah, that
we were,
was so
we were
early
auditioning
that we were
possible ensemble members when this came out.
It was that early that became a part of my character. So I feel like I honestly do feel a little bit like I took the easy way out, and for my character, I didn't have to think about the big issues as much. I sort of figured out an emotional touchstone for why a person would feel so powerfully driven to oppose the war. So yeah.
It obviously, that's not cheating at all. It worked very well. So congrats on a great show. Congrats to you all on, again, a very, very powerful show. Marvelously acted and constructed, very intricate. So I would probably just keep talking about this show with you guys, but I find that podcasts pass 15 or 20 minutes, people stop listening. So
probably true, yeah.
Thanks again, y'all. And
thank
congrats.
You.
Good luck. Break legs on any future iterations.
Thank you
so much. Thank you so much.
Many thanks to everyone from The Assembly for an incredible show, and to Stephen, Nick, Edward, and Jess for hanging out in the dressing room of The Living to do an interview. And though everyone knew in advance that this podcast wouldn't be released until after the show had closed, my apologies that it's taken this long to get out into the world. I can't wait to see what The Assembly has planned next. Check out their website and keep up with the company at theassemblytheaterwithaner.com. And thanks to you for listening into the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please head over to facebook.com/goseeashow and like the page. Follow me on Twitter @goseeashow and comment and rate on the podcast at iTunes. As always, send any comments, suggestions, praise, or complaints to me at Robbie, R-O-B-B-Y, @goseeashowpodcast. And before I go, quick note from the show's sponsor, Audible is offering you, dear listener, a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial checking out their service. To download a free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/goseeashow. Again, that's audibletrial.com/goseeashow for your free audiobook. Until next time, go see a show.
I mean, we can do this for longer.
I know.
We can talk forever.